It's Heine, you know?
Heine.
Roger Heine.
I would like to call the Senate Committee on Healthcare and Veterans Affairs to order. It is May 5th, Tuesday, a rainy day in Oregon, and welcome everybody. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2052. Mr. Shook and...
Madam Chair, House Bill 2052 requires governmental entity establishing specified facility to obtain advice from subcommittees of local public safety coordinating councils.
Okay, I see two representatives in the audience. Representative Olson, I know you're going to be talking on 2052, and Representative Greenlick, which one do you want to talk on?
2610.
Okay.
2610.
Okay, we'll get you in a minute.
Thank you.
No, we'll go ahead and get you, and then we'll get 2610.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm a state representative out of the Albany area and in a portion of Benton County. Just like to take an opportunity to share with you, House Bill 2052 deals with a psychiatric security review board issue. And you have my written testimony. I don't think I'm going to take the time out to read that to you, but just give it a nutshell version. You're aware of a number of instances across the state. There's been some concerns throughout communities with placements of PSRB homes in their communities. And the south end of Albany was one of those that experienced the same issue with the placement of a home over a year ago. Senator Morris and I met with Dr. Goldberg well over a year ago to just kind of discuss this whole issue as well. But in the meantime, what was kind of interesting last year during the February session, Governor felt that there was a serious need to address this issue and put together a task force dealing with PSRB homes and sightings, and I was asked to participate in that group. There was somewhere between 24 to 30 members that were part of that group, and we met on a monthly basis for 4 hours. It was a very interesting 4 hours each month. But all different perspectives came to the table. And I honestly felt that at that time, Madam Chair, members, that it was, the way things were going with the structure of the task force itself, we might not ever get accomplished what could have been a very simple thing to have done. So that's what 2052 actually does. It provides a voice for the community. It maintains the integrity of PSRB itself. And then the final thing that it really does is it increases transparency at all as well, because those were key things that we were wanting, and those were the themes that I constantly heard throughout our meetings that we held. But that's what the public was interested in as well. What this does is it takes this bill actually, and the concept goes into using the Public Safety Coordinating Council, your lip syncs. And it devises a little subgroup within the lip syncs. And on the second page, it identifies in the bill what those the members that participate in the subgroup. But it's your district attorney, your sheriff, or chief of the police department, depending upon the jurisdiction, the county mental health director, designee of the city council or board of commissioners, again, respective of the jurisdiction, consumer from the mental health community, and then also a representative of an organization that advocates on behalf of persons with mental health issues. And what they would do, within 60 days of receiving notification from PSRB for placement of a home for consideration in a community, they will then begin working together to attempt to try to locate a home or some residential area that would be a good fit. That's how simple this is. They return back to your local public safety coordinating council, share their findings. It gives you a great voice for the community. And I honestly think that this will solve a lot of the problems. This bill passed unanimously out of the House, as well as from the Human Services Committee that I'm a member of. And at this point right now, I would appreciate it if you would greatly consider moving it forward as well.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Representative Olson, why did you exempt the county commissioners from this bill if they fail to convene it. Okay. This section does not apply if the Board of Commissioners has failed to convene the local public coordinating council. Could you talk about that?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, it's designed actually to have a member of the county commissioners involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on what the jurisdiction is. I guess I'm not sure of your question.
Follow up on that. That was the question I was going to ask, and maybe we should have the whole panel come up, but I want to get Representative Greenlink on his bill before, and Suzanne Van Orman. I do have questions regarding what if they don't have a public safety coordinating council, is that mandated, and what if they don't have a sub?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, there are two counties within the state that do not have local public safety coordinating councils. I'm trying to remember what we were going to do with that.
It's rural counties.
Okay, it looks like people in the back are going to be able to answer those questions, Representative Olson.
That's good.
So are you willing to go? Do we have any more questions for Representative Olson? Okay. Thank you, Representative Olson. And we will close the public hearing on 2052 and open a public hearing on 2610. Is it House Bill 2610, Representative Greenlink?
I think that's right, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. State Representative Mitch Greenlink, House District 33, and I'm here today on behalf of House Bill 2610, which is intended to save our committee and your committee a little trouble. It deals with a statute that originally was a title protection statute for physicians, and it said only physicians could be called doctor in their practice, and pretty soon it was, well, what about podiatrists? Okay, they could be called doctors. What about chiropractors? Yeah, of course, chiropractors. And pretty soon you have a list of, I think it's 16 different professions that can be called doctor in their practice. In the 2007 session, we last dealt with it, you'll probably remember, with the title of Doctor of Oriental Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. And we had a little dispute between our two committees, in fact, over the new professional degree of Doctor of Physical Therapy. Well, I think after discussions that we had between us, we thought 2610 might be the answer, and it simply allows any professional with an earned degree in their health profession to call themselves, with an earned doctoral degree in their health profession, to call themselves doctor as long as it is followed by whatever it is they have a doctorate in, and it takes out the long list of everybody else. So it's pretty straightforward. It's intended to save us some time over the next several sessions that we're still here dealing with the question of who should be the next doctor, the doctor of tattoo therapy or whatever can come next.
I've got one of those.
or something.
Well, like a nurse practitioner who gets her doctorate in nursing, I can say doctor as long as they qualify it by a doctor in nursing, as I read the bill, isn't that
exactly
correct?
That's exactly what it is. And it would be whichever new profession, and more of them are coming up as doctors. I only use my title doctor, I can say this in testimony, when I'm trying to get a restaurant reservation. And this doesn't relate to restaurant reservations at all.
Any other questions?
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Representative Greenlink.
Dr. Greenlink, thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Mitch, maybe, okay, I just want to, because we do see a proliferation, but this only, I mean, the state of Oregon has to say that whatever practice we're talking about is a valid practice.
That's right.
Okay.
It has to be an actual earned degree in a health profession
that we recognize, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, because there are some we kind of don't. So.
I was just wondering how, for example, Dr. Osteopathy got recognized. I'm not sure. We need to ask one of your committee members.
I never should have allowed.
I think that's correct.
Madam Chair, what about if someone moves from the Philippines and they are a doctor in psychosurgery, can they be recognized? A doctor in psychosurgery?
Yeah, I suppose... They could be, but then I suppose they would have to say doctor of
psychosurgery
in their advertisement for in their massage therapy.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you, Representative
Thank
Greenlee.
You, ma'am.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on 2610 and open a public hearing on 2606. And Mr. Shook and then Representative Van Orman.
Mitch doesn't remember that.
Madam Chair, House Vote 2206 eliminates exceptions for certain child care providers and facilities subject to regulation by the Child Care Division.
Welcome, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you. Chair Ann Monis Anderson. I'm Representative Suzanne Van Orman, representing Hood River, Sandy, and the Mountain Villages of Mount Hood. And the bill today is, I have the good fortune to carry bills that fix things. And this particular bill is about providing child care in a business that probably shouldn't be in business. The Employment Department has seen problems in licensing and regulating facilities because currently a child care provider who has lost their license or been removed from the criminal history registry for cause will still be able to care for up to 3 unrelated children or to operate a preschool for 4 hours or less a day. So this bill is intended to close that loophole. It's pretty simple and straightforward.
Yes, Cruz.
Yeah, that's me. Just some confusion here, Representative. Removed from the criminal history registry, what does that?
For those of us who are in the business of child care or in Head Start, we're required by law to register and to have our background investigated so that we have clearance to work in these child caring organizations. So if your name is removed, you are no longer eligible
to provide the service. This registry isn't a registry of bad people, it's a registry of good people.
That's correct.
Okay, well, that does make a difference.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Okay.
Yes. And I resided in that for quite a few years as a Head Start director.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is very similar to some of the actions we've been taking in the education community this session.
All right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's basically just because you have opted yourself out some way that shouldn't exempt you. So,
but would this prevent someone who was, I'm thinking of a drug user who had been in jail and had a total turnaround, but had really nothing to do with, you know, abuse of children or anything?
I cannot say that because that's at the discretion of the people who do the criminal history.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Bates.
You know, I looked at this last night, this morning. I had a little trouble understanding it. I'm probably I should talk to the committee administrator on this, but I just wanted to make understand the criminal history registry. If you've been removed from that for cause, does that mean you might have been in there by mistake or you were accused? I don't quite understand.
These are good people.
If you're removed from it, Senator, it means that you're a bad person and you're no longer in the registry of folks that can be providers.
The criminal history registry is actually a registry of what you're calling good people.
Yeah.
What a strange name to have for it.
I agree.
That's what confused
me. Well, there is a bill to change the name.
Wonderful.
The good folks registry.
You've caught me in a bad morning. I can't recall exactly what it is. I think it's... Honestly, I can't recall.
So you passed something over in the House that we...
Yes, that will be coming shortly.
Okay.
We're going to get some clarification.
Central Background Registry. Thank you, Tom.
Tom, you might as well stay up here. Tom.
Okay,
okay.
Well, it wasn't coming to me. Central Background Registry. Yeah. So listen out, Tom.
Gotcha. I understand now. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So...
Tom?
You came just in time.
Yeah, do you want to just...
That was the only thing.
You want to continue the conversation on this?
Good. Why not? Just do it. We're going to get it back.
It's all yours now. Are you just wanting to...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just came up to give a piece of information to the good representative.
Okay.
She did a fine job.
Well, you're on the registry sheet, too. Do you have any comments?
Our testimony is being handed out.
Okay.
I really have nothing to add to what Representative Van Orman has said about this.
Excellent.
Madam Chair, my confusion has been satisfied at this point. I think this is a good bill.
Okay. Excellent. All right. With that, what was the vote in the House on this bill? Do you remember? Does anyone remember what the vote was on the House? Okay.
59 ayes.
59 ayes?
Okay.
Okay. Oh.
And the no was somebody who got confused about what the criminal was.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on 2206, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2206.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2206 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. Who would like to carry this bill? Senator Cruz?
Okay.
Okay. With that,
I get to explain the language.
That's right. I will close the work session on 2206, and we will open a, go back to the top, House Bill 2052. And we've already had it explained to us, and Jane Ellen... And who else? Jane Ellen's the only other person on this bill.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Jane Ellen Whitehouse with Addictions and Mental Health Division with the Department of Human Services. Addictions and Mental Health Division is the division that is responsible for building secure residential facilities throughout the state of Oregon to meet the needs of people under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board. House Bill 2052 is a bill that Representative Tomei and Representative Olson worked on very closely with all of the interested stakeholders, and the bill that you have in front of you is that negotiated bill that we all support. And in regards to Senator Morissette's question about what happens if there is no local public safety coordinating council, what would happen is that we are no longer mandated to go to the local public safety coordinating council or the LPSC. What we would do is our normal process that we've instituted recently of talking to local elected officials and community leaders and to tell them about the fact that we will be developing a facility in their community.
I have a question regarding neighborhood associations. We've, I think, had tried to have one or two in Gresham area, and once the neighborhood associations got involved, they and I was just wondering if they were considered one of the subgroup. You used to have Citizen Advisory Committee, now Facility Advisory Subcommittee of the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. Anyway, I'd sort of like to understand what maybe the process was in that area, because all of a sudden then the local officials decided, nope, we're not going to have it located where I thought was a very good site.
Chair, I think that what has happened over time is as people have found out more about the facilities, providers were working closely with local communities to place facilities, but the Department of Human Services was not at the table, was not coordinating those activities, and so the NIMBYism and not in my backyard definitely came to a head last year, and Representative Olson was mentioned the task force that the governor's office convened to try to bring some resolution to these issues. I think that with the process that this bill brings forward, as well as our stepped-up process of working with local officials, working with communities and neighborhood associations, really trying to get people to understand what the facilities do, who are going to be placed in those facilities, and also explaining to them both the Federal Fair Housing Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act and how that limits what local communities can do to discriminate against people with mental illness.
I think the concern is when they're forensic.
Chairman Ross Anderson, I agree with you. That has definitely been an issue. Senator Cruz?
Yeah. Jane Allen, do you know which two counties don't have lip syncs?
Chairman Ross Anderson, Senator Cruz, I knew you were going to ask that, and I was trying to remember.
Lake?
And...
If
that's for a county, why would a county one have jurisdiction over a local city's placement in a city? That seems strange.
I will turn this over to my learned colleague.
All right.
And the answer is?
Or maybe not so. For the record, Joe O'Leary, Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski. As best we a group of us in the back, could recall, one of those counties is Wallowa County, we think. Apologies to Wallowa County if we're wrong. And we can't remember what the second one is.
We're probably another small Eastern Oregon county, I would assume.
That's my guess. My other guess was that it would have been maybe the Sherman-Wheeler corridor that they might have a joint. I do want to note, though, that the statute that this bill is amending does require every county to have a local public safety coordinating council. And it is designed to be made up of both city, county, judicial branch, prosecution, public defense, mental health, all of the parts and pieces, if you will, of the public safety, the local public safety network. This is the group that they were designed really to make recommendations around how to spend the dollars that flow from the state through the Community Corrections Act for the disposition of offenders who don't go to prison, who stay under local control, who are sentenced to less than a year, or who are placed on felony probation. That was really the instigating force behind creating this group. And in many counties, they have flourished. Benton County, Lane County, Multnomah County, Klamath County have very, very active and robust lipsticks, and we really both from the governor's task force that addressed this issue, and then the work group that really hammered out the concept before you, really thought that they were the perfect entity to have this meet and confer requirement before them.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I still don't. Did you say that the statute requires every county to have one?
Yeah. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, that is correct.
But I'm still looking at line 32 on the second page. This section does not apply if the Board of County Commissioners has failed to convene a local safety coordinating council.
Chair Montes Anderson, Senator Morissette, the question that came up in the work group was, somebody knew in the work group, hey, there's at least one or two counties that don't have a lipstick. So this lipstick idea may be all well and fine, but what happens then if it's one of the two counties that doesn't have a lipstick? Then, you know, what is the responsibility of DHS if the county has not complied with the statute? And that was the reason that language was inserted, to make sure, and it only speaks to DHS's responsibility. If the county has failed for whatever reason to comply with the statutory mandate to put the lipstick together, then DHS is not required to go to an entity that doesn't exist in that county.
Well, that would make sense. Madam Chair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, tell me the purpose of the counties having the lipstick. Is it to manage, is it state money and so on that...
Chair Miles Anderson, Senator Morissette, there are several responsibilities set out in the statute, and one of the primary responsibilities is to determine how to spend the dollars that come from the state. They flow budgetarily. They flow through the Department of Corrections budget. It's about 200 and, I want to say it's a ballpark, don't hold me to it, it's about $250 million.
Okay, Madam Chair, why then do the counties who do not have the lipstick still share in that? Why? I don't understand that.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I believe those two counties do. At the moment, there are only two counties that have opted out of the Community Corrections Act, that also known as Senate Bill 1145.
They don't share in the money that the state sends to the county?
Those two don't.
Okay.
But Senator, those are not, I believe those two counties actually have a LIPSIC.
Yes, they
and,
do.
And yeah, it's Douglas and Linn County, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm sorry, I
but that's one funding stream. There are other funding streams.
Yeah, okay. Well, that is true.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the two counties that don't. As I mentioned, I'm uncertain as to exactly which two counties they are. So you've reached the limit of my knowledge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes. just say, you know, the LIPSIC in Douglas County has been very valuable. I have attended many of the meetings. For example, when we reinstituted the RAISE Teen Court Program, it was that coordinating body that allowed us to move forward with it. So I think they're a very appropriate entity to be involved here. And you have a good.
You know what the vote count of this bill was on the other side?
Just the
Madam Chair, I do not. I believe it was unanimous or near unanimous.
59.
Thank you. 59 ayes.
Is that all?
Okay. That one who, yeah. Okay.
Same person.
All right. There is a letter that you have from Mayor Janet Taylor, and she says Salem has many facilities housing individuals from various programs at the state and county level, and it would be very helpful for our public safety officials to know in advance where new facilities are considering locating. Mm-hmm. So, and other than that, we don't have any other testimony. Is there any other questions?
Let's move it.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2052 and open the work session on House Bill 2052.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2052 A and Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2052 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. Senator Morse, would you carry this bill?
Mm-hmm.
All right. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 2052. We will reopen House Bill 2610. And we have a number of people. And let's start with John McCulley and Inga Deckert, if you'd come forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
And Diana Goodwin.
Members of the committee, I'm John McCulley. I'm here representing the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association. Part of our membership is comprised of audiologists, and we are here to support House Bill 2610. I think Representative Greenlick described the bill very well for you. We had contemplated introducing a bill this session to add audiologists to the laundry list that Representative Greenlick had talked about, because the soon will be the minimal license degree for audiologists will be a doctor of audiology. So that is the standard degree that folks will have. They will be doctors, and believe it's vital to be able to use that term in their profession. And so we do support House Bill 2610. We think it clarifies the statute to a great degree in this area, and urge your support.
Questions? Okay.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Diana Godwin. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland. I specialize in representing medical practitioners, in particular physical therapy clinics that are owned by physical therapists. I have 140 clinics here in Oregon that I represent. I'm also licensed in Washington. I have 130 clinics up there. And I've practiced law on behalf of independent practice physical therapists for now about 25 years. And I am currently representing a physical therapist who earned a clinical doctoral degree in physical therapy in a contested case proceeding that the licensing board has brought against him because he taught a continuing education course last spring for a local hospital, and the hospital in advertising the course to various people. It was a course on pain management that he has a specialty in. The hospital published his biography, and in his biography it referenced the fact that he had earned a doctoral degree, clinical doctoral degree in physical therapy, and they referred to him in the advertisement as Dr. So-and-so. And the licensing board, the physical therapist licensing board, has brought an action against him. We are now in contested case. We have submitted our briefs to the administrative law judge. We are awaiting a decision. But the point is that he earned the clinical doctoral degree, and this current statute, we contend, does not specifically prohibit him from using that, but what it does say, as Mr. McCulley pointed out, is that if you use certain terms, if you're licensed by certain licensing boards, you just have to append words after your name. But the board has interpreted that statute to mean that no one else can use the term doctor if you have a license, if you have a clinical degree, a doctoral degree in your specific medical profession. And physical therapists are, in fact, medical practitioners. They are not physicians, but they are medical practitioners, and they're recognized as such in other areas. And as Mr. McCulley mentioned about audiologists coming out of school, every PT graduating here in Oregon now at Pacific University comes out with a clinical doctoral degree. So this statute has caused some confusion. It hasn't been amended in quite some time. It's ambiguous. It's some of the statutes in Chapter 677, the physician licensing statutes, are contradictory of this statute. The two of them don't mesh well together, and you're just putting licensed medical practitioners at risk by not allowing them to get credit for the clinical degree that they have earned. And I have worked with Representative Greenlick's office, and I would urge support for this bill today. And I believe at this point that the licensing board does not oppose this bill.
Interesting. Ms. Decker.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Inga Decker representing the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. And for reasons that you've heard this morning, the association supports House Bill 2610, standardizing the use of the title doctor and specifying in that title to which area of the of medical practice the person has expertise in. I think serves the public well, puts the public on notice that people have attained a certain level of education and expertise, and also protects practitioners, similar to the story that we've heard from Ms. Godwin this morning. So,
questions?
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I have a question.
You probably can't answer it, but
does the board have nothing better to do than to pick up cases like this and sue its own members?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, Diana Godwin again. On behalf of the board, this board is a very, very well-run and competent and considerate board. I believe their position is, and I understand their position, that they don't pick and choose among the issues that they bring cases about. If they feel that there is evidence to support the fact that the term doctor was used in any kind of advertisement, then they want to enforce their rule.
Madam Chair, the boards are set up to protect the public, and if the board has that much time and that much financial resources to do something like this, I think we should look at their budget.
No, wow. Senator Morris.
56 ayes, 4 excused.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right, thank you, panel, very much, and Mr. Kafori.
I think he had to carry the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here this morning representing the Oregon Association of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. I got a bill passed a few years ago to allow acupuncturists earn the degree of doctor, to use that term. The school here in Portland grants doctorate degrees. The problem was that people who came from other places, especially China, we have a lot of Chinese doctors, couldn't use it under that statute. And what this new statute 2610 will do is allow people, regardless of where they earned their doctorate, if they earned it, they will be able to use it. So we support the bill.
Any questions?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. That raises an interesting point. We had a person last session that wanted to be a naturopath, but his college degree was not accredited. How do we know that the people who come from China have an accreditation to warrant them using the term doctor? Do we do the background check? The naturopaths did a very good job doing a background check and disqualified this particular person.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, we do have the Office of Degree Authorization. It's a one-man office here in the state of Oregon, but it does a really superb job of monitoring those issues. And they make sure that degrees are granted from institutions that are accredited to grant those degrees and that people actually have gone to those schools.
Worldwide?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Excellent. Any other further? Okay. With that, I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2610A and open a work session on House Bill 2610A.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2610A and Gross to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz has moved House Bill 2610A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And Senator Bates, would you carry this bill?
Oh, I love to.
All right. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2610A. And colleagues, we are adjourned.